pick a window.
Oh, wow. I don't know about the costume, but that's some set of wheels.
Hi, I'm Marv Wolfman, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
You're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I am your host, the radioactive professor of all things comic book, J.C. Carter. Joining me today on the show are super friends. In the north, our punk pixie, Miss Jocelyn Christensen.
Hi, guys.
And on the bridge of his own private enterprise, our very own Admiral James Tiberius Batman, Laird Jeff Bell.
Look, I had a joke I was going to make here that involved being alive for more than 18,000 days, and I can't remember what the setup is anymore. So... hi.
Hi there.
That was good. That was good. Good recovery. Yeah. Solid.
Yeah. Yeah. Good work. Good work.
That was some solid. That was some solid show co-hosting right there. Mm-hmm. Nailed it.
We're once again missing Pat this week. So, you know, if you see her out in the wild or communicate with her on a regular basis, let her know you're missing her as well.
Yeah.
Because we definitely are missing her.
Yeah. She's got... I know she's trying to sell her place. Mm-hmm. So that's eating up a lot of her time right now.
Yep.
But yeah, no, I miss the hell out of Pat. So I hope she listens. I know. I mean, by the time this show drops, I've stopped listening.
You know? You've already done it and listened to it once to edit, right?
At least once. Yeah. At least once.
At least one time through.
I'll be honest, I don't listen, because to me, I don't like to listen to my own voice.
Do you listen on weeks you're off?
Yeah, usually. Usually I will.
Okay. Oh. We'll start leaving messages.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Now if I don't, I'm going to be in trouble.
Yeah, I have to, because, you know, on weeks I'm off, it's like, did they cover this, or am I going to have to bring it up? We are experimenting with a much shorter format this week. And on that, to that end, let's get on with our news.
Holy shit.
I wasn't expecting that.
Wow.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
I just thought of another opening joke.
Oh, okay. Good. Let's hear it.
Yeah, John, yeah. You sound really good this week. It's like you got it all cranked up to 11.
Windows 11.
Oh, Lord. Do-do-do. I can't remember the Windows jingle all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. That's one thing on computers we used to be able to change.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, mine used to be the THX intro sound. Yeah, but it's like It's like a 70-second sound clip. And so after about a year... Mm-hmm. I was forced to get rid of it. Look, I think you guys could tell right now that what I'm doing is avoiding some bad news.
Yeah.
And this is bad news. And unfortunately, this bad news that I'm going to report is going to take the form of an attack on Jocelyn. In the shape of... She bears no responsibility for this, but...
It's true. It's not my fault.
Yeah. JC and Michelle already quit. So here we are. The Girl Scouts... are discontinuing a cookie I've never eaten.
Raspberry crack is gone.
I don't know why, you guys. I don't know. They didn't consult me, I'll be honest.
The whole reason we didn't get to actually try raspberry crack is you had to order it not through a Girl Scout.
Right, right.
But online directly, and then... I thought, well, this will just be their way of getting people into it, and then we'll be able to order it through a Girl Scout, you know, through the usual Girl Scout ordering, I should say.
Right,
because there's two ways to order. You either order online in the Girl Scout's name, you pay with your debit card, which I did not have money at the time to do that.
Yep.
And they then ship the cookies to you. There's not even really an option to ship them to the Girl Scout to deliver them to you. And I like that. You talk to a Girl Scout, or more specifically, the Girl Scout's mom, who then has a sheet of that she fills out that says, you want this many boxes of these cookies, this many cases, in my case, of this cookie. And by the way, very disappointed in the case of cookies I got last time. The caramel chocolatey ones.
Adventure Falls.
Those were terrible.
Yep, we're getting those back, but not the goddamn Raspberry Rally.
That sold out. That sold out everywhere in like 10 minutes.
You know, it's like when Sci-Fi canceled Eureka. They're like, oh, this show is performing 10 times better than our number two show. Let's replace it with professional wrestling.
Right.
So this is what we get. The Raspberry Rally is pulled. We will not be able to buy it next year, but you'll still be able to get the fucked up cookie that John hates.
The Adventure Falls.
Whatever.
I don't hate them, but they needed more caramel. That was my problem. I was ordering a salted caramel cookie, and all I taste is chocolate.
Diabolical. The next thing you know, they'll just be creating lesbians out of thin air over there at the Girl Scouts. Abortions for everyone!
We're doing our best, okay?
Indoctrination is just not happening anymore. Yes.
So, yeah, I felt that that was more important than dead people.
Yes,
right. Right, it really, really is.
Dead cookies. Now we transition.
Wow.
Yes. Keith Giffen, co-creator of Lobo, the main man.
The main man himself.
And Rocket Raccoon. Or even Rocket Raccoon. I'm hungry.
I'm sorry.
That's what I want. I want Raccoon.
Rangoon?
Yeah, Rangoon. Fuck it. I'd eat it. I'd eat just about any right now. But anyway, Keith Giffen, legendary comic creator known for his work on Justice League International, Legion of Superheroes, as well as co-creating Rocket Raccoon, Lobo, Jaime Reyes, Blue Beetle. Passed away at the age of 70. And then...
does a baller move.
And then... so there he is. There's Keith.
Yeah.
Deed. Like, I have expired. Okay. Don't forget my last tweet. I told them I was sick. Anything not to go to New York Comic Con. Thanks. Keith Giffen, 1952 to 2023. Bwah, ha, 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 ha.
I loved it. I loved it.
I barely knew you, dude, but you wrote, if I believe, he is responsible for Batman punching Guy Gardner in the mouth.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Yes. And that right there makes this man my goddamn hero.
There.
We have a gentleman at work that comes in that keeps like trying to find me. Actually, the basis of the joke is that he's African American. He has a voice that is about two octaves lower than mine.
Wow.
And he's like the nicest guy. And we were talking about something, and I was just like, you know, buddy, you'll never know. You'll never know how it feels to just lack representation in comic books. And he looks at me like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I'm like, yeah, man. I'm like, name a good redheaded superhero. And he's all, Guy Gardner. I said, good! Not the bowl cut and the sleeveless leather jacket douchebag, you know?
Wally West?
Wally West keeps breaking time like a chump. He's Matt responsible. Murdock. Is he not responsible for the new 52?
That's true.
No, that was Barry Allen.
Oh, okay. He should have stopped Barry. God damn it, Wally.
In fact, Barry Allen breaking it and creating the new 52 erased Wally from the timeline. And the way that they fixed it was they brought Wally back into the timeline. And everybody suddenly went, oh, my fucking God, I remember 10 years of my life that I lost.
Oh.
That was the best thing about Wally West returning. Oh, and then, of course, Matt Murdock, Daredevil.
Yes, true.
Is a ginger.
Is it? Yeah.
Sometimes.
It depends on who's coloring him.
Yeah.
Sometimes he's more of a brunette.
But basically, you're talking about the physical manifestation of Catholic guilt.
Yeah.
With a black belt. I don't have any Catholic guilt. And my black belt is so old, I don't think it counts anymore. I think if my old sensei was still alive, he'd take it away. He'd be like, I don't think you can kick higher than your waist, chump. Give me that bag.
I can't even get to my waist anymore.
I tied my black belt on and I can't find it. In what is got to be childhood trauma on feet, Dick Butkus. Yeah, that must have been a rough elementary school, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Pro Football Hall of Famer, and I will add to what is missing from this headline, Dad on Webster. Wasn't that Dick Butkus?
No.
Or was that Papadopoulos? No. That's Papadopoulos. Never mind. No, fuck it. Dick Butkus is dead. He played football. Florida Bears.
Dick Butkus was, I mean, he was, he transitioned into acting after his football career ended. And he did it at first. He'd like, he did this Alan Alda movie where Alan Alda like tries to get onto a football team as a writer for Sports Illustrated. And it was a really cool movie. It's all Alan Alda centric. So you feel like you're watching Hawkeye play football. That was okay. But to me, the breakout role for Dick Butkus was in Victor Victoria, where he's sort of the bodyguard of this dude and of what's his name? Rockford.
Yeah.
Jim Rockford. And so he's the bodyguard for this guy. And then all, and then at the end you find out, oh no, he's gay and he's fallen in love with the other male, with the male gay character. And I'm like, here's a guy who played pro football, has spent his whole life fighting that name that he's had.
Heroic.
And he just said, you know what? Fuck it. I'll be the gay guy. It's like, and back in that era, back in the 70s, unheard of. Never would have happened.
Just,
but no,
just he Jack Tripper, and he was pretending.
Yeah.
Jack Tripper. Julia Ormond is suing Monster Harvey Weinstein for battery. She's also suing Disney, CAA, and Miramax for negligence. This one made me sad. She's suing disgraced former film producer Harvey Weinstein for battery and sexual assault that she says occurred in 1995. She's also suing Miramax, which Weinstein used to own, as well as Walt Disney, who used to own Miramax, for negligence, and Hollywood Talent Agency, CAA, the Creative Artists Agency, who represented her, for negligence and breach of fiduciary trust.
As she should.
Yep. In the complaint, Ormond alleges that in December of 1995, she and Weinstein were supposed to have a business dinner to discuss a project. It's important to read this stuff. It's important to know this stuff so that if it pops up, you can recognize it. No matter how much I don't wanna, here we go. however, at the dinner, Weinstein refused to discuss business matters, saying he, quote, would only discuss the project back at the apartment Miramax had provided for Ormond as part of their first deal look with her. Once at the apartment, Weinstein, quote, stripped naked and forced her to perform oral sex on him. Weinstein categorically denies the allegations. Fuck that guy. I believe it.
Yeah. 100%.
This isn't an isolated incident for you, Harvey. You can deny it all you want, but yeah.
I mean, say what you will. At least Louis C.K. just abused plants.
Yeah, I know.
While being a royal fucking terror and a monster of a person.
Right.
All right. That's it for the news.
Wasn't something good we could end on? That was awful.
No, there's some good news. I got some good news in the TV news. You guys will be happy. All right.
We're going to take a little break so we can all go have a shower after that story. Okay. And when we come back, we're going to be talking moving pictures.
It's the tinsel time.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, How would you recognize them? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job?
Not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters?
Or a mother who's in between jobs
and sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner?
I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Elena Huffman, Abaddon on Supernatural, and you are listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
There is nothing wrong with your television. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are now controlling the transmission. We control the horizontal and the vertical. We can deluge you with 1,000 channels or expand one single image to crystal clarity and beyond. Please stand by.
Singing Jeff is always better than... Crying, oh,
yeah.
Jeff? I don't know.
Yeah. No, I'll go with that. And I'm just saying, if you want to hear me sing, you're going to have to pop over to Patreon.
Yep.
Because that's where I sing the most.
Yes.
It is true.
All right.
I don't know if I've ever sung in Patreon, but by God, I am going to today.
You will now.
Yep. Anyway, hi.
Recording?
Yeah,
like,
I think it's
so confused.
I'm pretty sure it's John's turn to ask us what we've been watching this week.
Oh yeah, that's right. What have you been watching this week that wasn't Loki?
Fair. All right, I'll start as usual. I have had like a crappy couple of weeks going on, so I have been watching a crap ton of shows. Mm-hmm. Most of them though are rewatches, so there's not really much to like discuss in great detail. I did watch, I assume we're going to talk about Ahsoka at the end because we didn't get to finish that one off together. What the hell was that? I fell asleep watching Shazam Fury of the Gods. I also fell asleep. Nope, I did not. I missed the first half, but watched the ending of Green Lantern with Ryan Reynolds.
The bad half.
I don't know.
Context is fine.
It was okay, the parts I saw. I did do a rewatch of Werewolf by Night. What a delightfully fun show that was, you guys.
Yeah,
go back and watch it. It's
we gotta watch that one again.
Yep, yeah, you gotta watch it again. Let's see, what else did I watch? I started Harley Quinn finally and watched the first episode. I restarted a rewatch of the MCU. That's gonna be my background of work for a while. I'm up to the Avengers so far. We're doing the release order that's on Disney Plus.
Okay, yeah, we've done that at the shop.
Yeah. So I'm up to the Avengers on that. I remembered suddenly that Mallrats is part of the MCU.
Yep.
I'm basing that on the evidence of,
Stan Lee.
And he was reading the script in Captain Marvel.
Yep.
Yeah. So I did watch that as part of the MCU.
Silent Bob are Disney princesses.
Yes, mm-hmm. It's lovely. I think it's the best thing to ever happen in my world. And then I watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie.
So did we. We did it at work yesterday.
Did you?
Yes.
Holy crap. I forgot about vampire cramps. Yeah. I totally forgot about vampire cramps, you guys. And Yeah.
Also...
So dumb.
And you want to talk about a quick course correction. When he got the opportunity to make the series,
right?
That went the fuck away. That went away because that was. Why are you putting that in there?
What was her physical reaction? Menstrual cramps. Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Did being near a vampire cause menstruation?
Well, this should have been a sign.
Looking back, this should have been a sign of a giant red flag on Joss Whedon right there.
Yeah. Joss Whedon, he didn't direct the movie, did he?
No, he just wrote the movie.
Did he not? Did he just write it? He didn't direct it?
Yeah, he just wrote it, and you know, so if it's in dialogue, I assume that came from him, not from the director. Whereas pacing, changing of, you know, certain things, that all would have come from the director. He was not happy with it in the end and wanted to do something different. So it became a series after that. And like I said, that he realized, oh, I fucked up on the cramps thing. So he got that out of there. The creepiness all around was still in it.
It still had Paul Rubens.
Yes. Yes.
Robbed of an Oscar-winning death scene.
Yep. Best, to this day, still the best death scene ever filmed. Yes.
Oh. I in my former relationship, somewhere in the first couple of years, there was an accidental ball smashing.
Oh, ouch.
And performatively, to sort of play off the non-seriousness of the excruciating pain, mm-hmm. I did an homage to Paul Rubens' death scene that went over like a lead balloon. Like, what the fuck are mm-hmm. you doing? I'm like, nothing. Never mind. Sorry.
Nothing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why I tell that story. That wasn't funny. Never mind.
I don't know.
Move on.
Because it's where your head went when we talked about it.
Paul Rubens' death scene.
There you go.
No, you're still going. Please, go ahead.
No, you're good. No, you're good. I was just going to say, that's kind of the highlights of what I watched. What'd you watch, Jeff, besides Buffy the Vampire Slayer, ironically?
What we threw on yesterday at the shop is I got in super fucking early to get the changeover for all the new silver and bronze issues we brought in.
Right.
That's commercial time. We're doing that at Dr. Volt's every Saturday. We're bringing in, you know, a shitload of silver and bronze keys, new ones every week.
Nice.
We had last week, and this is, I guess, should have been in the news. We had a copy of Amazing Fantasy 15, and it is in wonderful shape for being as old as it is. We're having an argument right now where the guys think it's going to come in at about a 6. I think it's coming in at about a 7. Our comic book presser guy thinks it's coming back as a 7.5. You know, I'm going to stick with 7, but it was electric to have that in the shop. It was electric to be able to pick up something not only worth so much,
right,
but that is just so fucking historical because there's so few of them left, especially ones that are this clean. So. Nice. We had a lot of people in. We had a good parade through yesterday or Saturday. We you know, slightly fewer, let's be honest. I mean, you know, Amazing Fantasy 15 is a pretty good fucking draw.
Right.
You know, but we did. We had more folks in yesterday. It was great. It was really good. I liked it. Come down and visit us at Dr. Volt's every Saturday until the end of the year to see all of these great silver and bronze pieces, the keys that we picked up in this gigantic collection that we got here not too long ago. It's been fucking awesome. It's been great. So what did I watch this week? Okay, I've got a surprise one. The end of Ahsoka broke my fucking heart.
Right?
I don't know what it was setting up, but I have a solution. Are you ready for my solution?
Yes.
Please tell us your solution. Please.
Leave Schreiber takes over the role that Ray Stevenson had. You put a beard on him, and he's got that deep, gravelly gravitas that Ray Stevens had. You know, Ray Stevenson had. I think Liev Schreiber will save Ahsoka.
Okay. That sounds like a great plan.
I mean, it would depend upon what he set up, you know, post his death. But I thought he's on a quest. It's obvious his character's on a quest for something on that world. It could alter him. You know, maybe not in a Darth Vader way, but alter the way he looks, so that sort of thing.
Maybe
so
a wampa in a cave kind of way.
Yeah, and when he comes back, then his apprentice wouldn't recognize him and would freak out and try to kill him. That could be a fun little 5 minutes of them fighting. That
Dear
was my thought.
Dave Filoni.
Yeah,
we got an idea for you, sport. I too wear a cowboy hat, which makes us either dating. Or at least relatives.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somehow.
But I'll tell you at this point, I'd date Filoni for a job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wouldn't have to be date. We could be far more informal. yes, Dave, I'll blow you for a job. Okay? All right. Let's just be honest. I need work.
So anyway, obviously Ray Stevenson's on a quest, or his character was on a quest, so something could happen. Yep. Or you could just leave him on that planet.
That's just it. We just don't revisit that character anymore.
Anymore. It's all over.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, they fight their way to a space whale and get the fuck back to
the
galaxy.
The opening scene is him slipping on a pebble on that outstretched hand.
Yeah.
And just pitching off over the side.
Yeah. There you go.
And then she could be at the bottom going, "Well, shit." Do I get my tuition back?
Scream as he falls and everything.
All right, what else we watch? Let's see, Wrexham. Welcome to Wrexham. Just still delighted by that. This was the giant killer episode.
That was so good.
I thought they were setting us up, and then they did a rope-a-dope, and it ended up really good.
I sit there going, there's always a rope-a-dope at the end of these. And what's so crazy is they're doing a rope-a-dope every time, and yet
I'm still second-guessing myself.
Yeah, because this is still reality in that they actually have to play these games, against these other teams, and whether they win or lose. This isn't like – it's not like, what you were just the other soccer show you guys like.
Ted Lasso.
It's not like Ted Lasso where a writer can say, this is how the game goes. In Wrexham, they are the team's actually playing the winning or losing the game or tying up the game. And it was just that wonderful, I think I'm going to get rope-a-doped here at the end, but I'm waiting. I'm hoping I don't. And
fair.
Yep.
All right. So yesterday, as I was saying at the shop, I came in early. Threw on a little soccer, finished up a match I'd been watching at home, and then put on The Lost Boys.
Ooh.
Yeah. When the COVID was going around.
Yes.
And the theaters were trying to stay alive. We had already had the COVID, so Tiffany and I went and saw a couple of those movies, like Raiders of the Lost Ark and such. And then Lost Boys, and I got all super excited, and I hadn't seen it in about 20 years or so. So we watched Lost Boys, and we get to the end, and the credits start rolling, and Tiffany turns to me and says, "What the fuck was that?" And I said, "It's an 80s vampire movie." Okay. Nothing. I had no defense. It is a cheese weenie movie. It is silly and superfluous. I still love it.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when half-naked sax guy with the purple yoga pants pops up again. Every day he's just up there playing his sax. I mean, you know what? That's one of the things I miss from the 80s is the saxophone.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear a lot of good saxophone anymore. Do you? They don't even have saxophone in porn.
Not really.
Yep.
I fucking love that movie, by the way. Porn? Love Lost Boys.
Oh, Lost Boys.
Yeah. No, porn. Yeah. I don't know if I love porn, but, I watch it enough.
It's a 50-50. I love it, and then all of a sudden, I'm guilty.
Yeah.
So, we're killing Jocelyn. This is cracking me up. So then we did Lost Boys. We did Killer Clowns from Outer Space, which I don't know if you know this or not, is PG-13. Nothing else Hollywood-themed or Halloween-themed is. And then after we did Little Shop of Horrors. And then after that, I wandered into overtime and had to leave, so I don't know what Braxton watched. And then, I watched, I went back and revisited the Aaron Sorkin Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. I needed something familiar, but something I hadn't watched recently. And I will be honest with you, the last two episodes of that show still make me cry. Literal wetness out of my eye holes. Oh, that was such a good fucking series. There's no episode I dislike.
Yeah, it was a great series. And the first episode alone was the best piece of comedy acting advice I ever heard. And I would try to share it with comedy when I was directing comedies. I tried to share it with my cast, and they're just staring at me blankly because
butter.
I'm like, this is why the show was canceled is because nobody fucking watched this show, and you should have been.
I got a laugh at the table read, but I didn't get a laugh at dress. And he says, "Well, in the table read, you asked for the butter."
No, he said in dress rehearsal, you asked for the laugh. Well, what did I ask for in the table read? You asked for the butter.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's how you do it. Yep. Ask for the butter.
There you go.
And then Loki, which we're not talking about yet.
Nope, not yet.
Not yet.
Okay. How about you, sir?
It's been one of those weeks. Just nothing's really on. And then the person I wanted to watch Loki with was never home. So I didn't get to watch it. But yeah, I watched Wrexham. We already talked about that, but I did get to see Blue Beetle finally.
Oh, what did fun.
I fucking love this. This is, thank you. Thank you DC for this movie. And this is pre, James Gunn takeover. And I hope that they let, Madureira, I'm probably butchering his name, come back and play Jaime Reyes again. Everything about it was fucking amazing, and I just loved it. This was for Latinx Americans what Black Panther was for African Americans, in my opinion.
It was Sandinistan Grandma is my favorite thing, and if she doesn't get a miniseries, I'm being robbed.
I need a Sandinista Grandma miniseries because that was so fucking funny. And I'm like, she fought with Che. Grandma looks like somebody who fought with Che. Grandma fought with Che. Then there was, the ending, the little tack on ending I thought was great too. Because I'm like, good. You didn't show me a body of Ted Kord, so therefore Ted Kord's got to come back somehow. And it gives James Gunn so many places to go, and I'm telling you, it doesn't. There's no problem with it. Just keep that cast together. Just do it, James Gunn. Keep that cast together. It's a good series. You will have a built-in audience every fucking time you do it. You know, the Latino audience is going to be there for you. Make it happen. Yeah, that's my two cents on Blue Beetle.
It made me laugh. It made me laugh a lot,
mm-hmm.
You know, and it's weird because The Flash made me laugh, but I walk, you know, we get the other end of the Flash and it's like, you know, if it weren't for the George Clooney bit, I would have hated that movie,
mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's just.
Even with the George Clooney bit, I hated that movie, yeah. But this one didn't, I mean, I loved it and it was a stronger offering than the Shazam and, Black Adam movies, and I really liked the Black Adam movie. But it was a stronger offering than those two. Yeah, everything about it was a lot stronger, a lot better movie. And George Lopez steals the fucking show.
Like, I kept having a hard time reconciling that was him, not only because of how he looked, but because his acting was fucking great.
I know! I know! And he had the Cheech bobblehead. It is truck, and I'm like, I know who you're doing, and this is so fucking funny. You're so good. I mean, you saw it in the second trailer, I think, was when you hear him say Batman's a fascist.
Yep.
I knew that joke was coming, but the setup was so fucking perfect that it caught me by surprise, and I just barked this huge laugh out at it because it was just so funny. Oh my god. Yeah, well done. Well done, movie. Please, James Gunn, give me a Blue Beetle 2. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's good.
Because we have other news about that. But before we do that, you guys, tell me about Loki, season 2.
It is, there's no, okay. One, they built that set, that, and you saw it at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
That McDonald's set that you're going to see.
Yes.
They built that in an Indian restaurant.
No.
Yeah, they it wasn't like they just like found an old McDonald's and made it. They just come, it's fucking nuts. I saw the behind the scenes on it. But
I have to watch that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
In that Indian restaurant's defense, it was an old McDonald's.
I was gonna say.
It very well could have been. But no, you get through to the end of episode one and you're like, what the fuck is going on? And then yes. You get to the end of episode two and you're like, what the fuck is going on? This is great.
Yes.
Yes. When you stack it up against like fucking Secret Invasion, it's embarrassing for Secret Invasion.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I don't know. It's like they're from two different fucking universes because this is so goddamn good. And what's his name? Right. Short Round. I can't remember his name.
Oh, yes. I can't remember it either.
Yeah. Anyway, he's
in it. Kei Hai Kwan.
Thank you.
He's in it and it's not a tiny part. I mean, he's a tiny guy, but it's not a tiny part.
Good.
You know, yeah.
I was so surprised to see him as early as I did. Yeah, I expected that it would be a several
stunt
episodes
casting.
In before we
yeah.
saw him.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be a stunt
because
cast
I saw him in one of the trailers and I was like, God, that guy's in everything now. And no, to see that he's a big role in it, that's even better for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So good though. Like just, I laughed really hard in between my, what the fuck is going on moments. I was laughing my ass off. It was so good.
Yep. Yep. So that is all I can say without spoilers.
Yep. Agreed.
Good enough.
Yeah.
I will probably get to watch it today of all days.
Fingers crossed for you.
Fingers crossed. It's whether or not everybody's like, oh, I don't know if I want to. It's like, you know what? We've hit the point of no return. I'm watching it on my own. Leave there the room go. If you don't want to get spoilers, because I'm watching it on the big screen too. I'm not going to sit here on my computer and watch it like I do Lower Decks. Oh, Lower Decks! I forgot to mention that I watched Lower Decks.
Oh, nice.
Which was a fucking amazing, funny as hell episode again. Yes.
Nice.
Yes. All right, let's do some movie picture news.
Oh, I don't have a sound cue for this. I'm reaching over to pause. all right, let's burn these off. Disney Plus, The Rocketeer, the reboot has finally got a writer, which is like one of those official things that has to happen for shows to be made. So
now the writer strikes over, we can hire somebody.
Yeah. So we're going to have a Rocketeer movie.
Awesome.
Is it? I mean, is Jennifer Connelly going to come back? Because... she was the only, to me, redeeming... Well, Alan Arkin was in it.
Alan Arkin was amazing in
but
it,
but he's
yeah.
dead, so is Jennifer Connelly coming back?
Is it a movie or a series, though? I thought it was a series.
It is a series.
Okay. Wasn't it... Who played the... who played the Errol Flynn role?
Some generic...
No, Billy...
gentleman.
Billy something.
Billy Crudup? Yep. No,
yeah.
Billy.
I think it was Billy Crudup. I don't know. We can look it up. Somebody could type while I'm talking.
We could do that. We could.
So it's official, gang. Gal Gadot, Jason Momoa, Ben Affleck, Henry Cavill. They're out. They're done. They're hanging up their DC bona fides. They are taking their, I'll say,
hanging
victory lap.
Figures.
You know. And we are moving on with the new universe, folks, which is funny because the big rumor right now is that Momoa will stay in the DCU, but this time as Lobo.
Hmm.
So we'll see how that goes. I mean, seriously, who the fuck else could do it? Name an actor that could pull off Lobo with very little makeup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Jump back to The Rocketeer. It was Billy Campbell.
Billy Campbell.
Well, Billy Campbell was The Rocketeer.
Yes.
But Timothy Dalton...
Oh, yeah.
Was Neville Sinclair, who was based on Errol Flynn.
Yes.
Because Errol Flynn, after World War II, way after World War II, we learned he was a Nazi sympathizer. Yeah. So they kind of based the Neville Sinclair character, who was an actor, you know, a superstar actor of the silent era and the early 30s era after him. But they didn't want to say his name because, you know, Errol Flynn is, you know, trademarked.
All right.
Yeah, a lot of dead people in that cast. So it was a while ago that we did Rocketeer, though. So yeah.
Yeah, it's been a minute. It's definitely been a minute.
Honestly, I'd just like to see a modern, like they've like it's Billy Campbell, you know, his character's great grandson or something. He finds the rocket pack. That'd be fun.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah. So it'd be DC. Ghostbusters 3.
Mm-hmm. There you
go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Paramount TV Studios is no longer going to make limited series in the United States. They're done. They will make some series not in the United States. They will continue to do that. But they're done in this market. They are moving on to other things. Mm-hmm. Now, that's okay, limited series, which I think if you were to... If this has been something that's been brewing at Paramount for a while, that's mm-hmm. probably the main reason why Section 31 is going to be a movie instead of a limited series. Because it was going to be 6 episodes. And they're going to make yep. a movie instead. So...
There's a lot going on, and it has a lot to do with the negotiations with the writers and the actors that push them to say, we're not going to do this in the United States. Notice they say, we're not doing this in the United States. We're happy to exploit everyone in other countries putting together limited series and stuff, and we're happy to put those out, but we're not going to do them here in the United States. So, yeah, that's what I'm getting from that little missive of theirs is, yeah, we're not doing this here in the United States. But we're still doing them.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're just not going to screw over American actors because they have American writers because they have a union. Yeah.
All right. Next up, Star Trek Prodigy's moving to Netflix for its next season.
We saved Star Trek Prodigy. Woohoo.
Yay.
Woo. Good job, everybody.
So, yeah, both seasons of the animated kids show, including the unaired sophomore run, have found a new home. Paramount Plus.
Now,
at Netflix.
At Netflix from Paramount Plus. Now, here's the best news. We can now watch them without having to be interrupted by fucking Nickelodeon commercials, which was killing it for me. It made me not enjoy it as much the first half of the first season. But no, you should go and watch it. If you're a fan of Star Trek, if you were a fan of Voyager, watch this one. It's not just for kids. Yes, it was written for kids. A lot of great shows have been written for kids, and they're still worth watching. So watch this one. Yeah. Good Star Trek.
Yeah. Little Einsteins, Phineas and mm-hmm. Ferb, Debbie Does Dallas, all these kids shows.
Yeah, all these fantastic kids shows.
The Drew Barrymore Show writers declined to return to the show after the writer's strike ended.
Oh, wasn't that just like the best like ending to that story? Yeah. I thought.
They're like, you're a garbage person.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I don't want to come back to your show. It's a fuck around and find out thing that I just fucking love. Yeah.
It's wonderful. You know, right. I mean, I hope they got other gigs set up, but... let's see, what's next? 800 Doctor Who episodes now available to stream ahead of the 60th anniversary specials. The TV movie. Wonderful Doctor, horrible movie.
Right.
You know.
Paul McGann. Paul McGann, really, really great idea. And then they do this whole, I'm half human on my mother's side. And I was like, you motherfucker.
Right.
Wrote that shit. I want to kick your ass right now. So yeah, I in the end, I chalk it up to regeneration syndrome, which the doctor seems to be crazy for the first episode of going through regeneration. So he says all kinds of shit that should never be taken seriously. And half human on my mother's side is one of them. Yeah.
Anyway, available for streaming on iPlayer November 1st.
What is iPlayer?
I'm guessing it's an Apple thing.
Nope.
God damn it.
Nope.
No.
This is the BBC's streaming service. You will have to set your VPN, providing you have one, to Britain in order to watch it. Otherwise, they will tell you you do not live in the right country to stream on the iPlayer.
Can somebody explain that to me off record?
Yeah, we can do that.
How to hook up your
I don't tech, and the tech guy isn't here today to help me, you guys.
Yep.
I'm glad everything's working.
iPlayer is basically you go to bbc.com and the iPlayer is there, and you can watch any, if you live in Britain, you can watch any of their shows streaming. And it's funny that they're making this big announcement. We have all 800 Doctor Who episodes. When Doctor Who came back in 07, was it?
Yeah, 2005?
Oh, 05 maybe?
Yeah.
I was going to say earlier than 07.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was like 05. When he came back in 05, and then, you know, first season, they didn't know what to do, and then it was a huge hit. I think by the second season of Tennant, iPlayer had every Doctor Who episode on, and I was so pissed because I couldn't watch them. The VPN I was using they were basically trying to rob their customers.
Yeah.
In my opinion. So I dumped them, and that was a sad moment because it was the only way I got to watch Doctor Who at the time, because we just stream it on iPlayer after it had aired. But yeah, this, they announced we're putting all the Doctor Who's on. I'm like, every episode, I'm like, motherfucker, I don't have a good VPN right now. So yeah.
Yeah, it's a drag, but yep. I mean, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. Let's see, one more story. Oh, yeah. It's the one I forgot to tell you about during the TV, was what we're watching segment.
Mm.
I started watching Moonlighting with Tiffany.
Oh.
Now, things happened and we had to move on with our day before we finished episode one.
Mm.
But there's a lot of cringe in episode one.
I bet.
Not only in dialogue, but, and I'm going to say this out loud, and I'm going to say it with a straight face. Prepare yourselves. Gosh. Bruce Willis became a much better actor than he was at the beginning of Moonlight. Like, yards and yards of improvement by the time he got to, I don't know, that magnum opus apocalypse or asteroid or whatever the fuck it was called.
Mm-hmm.
The fuck was that movie called? Armageddon. Thank you. Forgot about that.
I think it should have been called Asteroid. Yes.
Yeah. Asteroid! Exclamation points at the end.
He was in Armageddon.
Yeah, he played Liv Tyler's dad. He shot at Ben Affleck.
I have no recollection of him in that movie. I know the movie.
He led the team that went up to...
he's the guy who died at the end to save everybody.
Yes. Yeah. No, I believed you. I just literally the cast, and I'm like, there's a black hole in that. I don't know. I'm going to ask. It's
but you remember Steve Buscemi, yeah?
I just love that the lead in that movie is the one you forgot. It was Bruce Willis. I think that's so telling of how his career wound up going.
To my credit, in 1998, when the movie was released, I wasn't looking at Bruce Willis. I was looking at Ben Affleck.
That's fair. Ben Affleck or Liv Tyler.
Right.
Yeah. Hell, or even, both. I mean, even Billy Bob Thornton looked pretty tasty in that one. I say that to make cringe. Anyway, yeah, so Moonlighting's back. It's on Hulu.
All right.
Man, I know who Cybill Shepherd is. I know. I've known her my whole life.
Right.
I just forgot how ridiculously pretty she was. Mm. You know? She pops up on screen. I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hair. Bruce Willis has hair. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was...
But
man, how the mighty have fallen. I know what that feels like, Bruce.
Yeah. I have, though, so much anticipation to get halfway through season two and get to that Taming of the Shrew episode. I can't stand it. That was peak 80s television for we literary drama geeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I bet it was.
Yep, I'll bet it's awful, and I'm still looking forward to it.
I still hate it. I did not like it when it aired, and so I'm like, I don't know if I want to watch that one again. I'm thinking, maybe if I watch it again, I'll appreciate it a little more, because at the time I was deep into Shakespeare, and it was like, you have offended me, sir. You know, now that I'm distanced, and I've done my summers of Shakespeare readings, where we got to not only read Shakespeare, but kind of make fun of it as we went along. Now I could go back and look at it and maybe get a laugh out of it. because I did not find it funny the first time.
There you go.
Mostly because Sybil Shepherd changed the closing monologue, and I was like, I'm upset about this.
You get over
it. And
now
I'm like, why would I be upset about this? I don't know why I was upset about that. Yeah.
Yeah. That is it for the Tinseltown news.
Ooh. All right. We're going to take another break. And when we come back, we're talking comics.
My name is Peter Davison. I played the Fifth Doctor. And you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to me on the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Wah, wah, wah!
Let's talk about some comic books. Let's do comic book news.
Comic book news? Hey, that's a great idea. Skybound's Energon universe, which started with Void Rivals, has now dropped issue one of the Transformers, which, by the way, is pretty fucking good. This will be getting not only G.I. Joe, which we already knew about, but we'll be getting Cobra Commander number one and Duke number one coming up here pretty quick. So we've got, if you pop over to thecomicbookpodcast.com and click on the article, you can see some excerpts from Cobra Commander and Duke. And they look really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
All right.
It's weird. I've never, you know, Larry Hama aside, I've never gone, boy, I'm really looking forward to some G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
Ever in my life. I have never thought that.
Larry Hama wrote some really good issues, at least back in the 80s, at least of the ones I picked up. I was always like, hey, I really like this issue. And the thing is in comparison to the TV series, yeah, what was coming out in the comics was so much better. But yeah, the artwork on these, these new things, the artwork, the general, all of it.
It looks like, I mean, overall, it looks like Skybound is gonna, you know, be very, very respectful to the properties, while still giving us content that's not necessarily mm-hmm. as juvenile as what's been provided before. I don't know. It looks good. The first couple pages of Cobra Commander they have in there is obviously pretty close to mature readers.
Mm-hmm.
So, fair. Okay, good to know.
Speaking of for mature readers, Garth Ennis will be writing a new James Bond series.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I might pick up a James Bond comic book now.
Yeah, Dynamite, and actually, you should pick up the other ones. They're fucking great.
They're amazing. Yeah, they're really good.
Fair.
Dynamite Entertainment this week announced that the boys' co-creator Garth Ennis will take on the writing chores for an all-new James Bond series, celebrating this year's 70th anniversary of Ian Fleming's super spy character by setting up a new status quo for Bond early next year. The new series will launch in January and will take on a version that's close to the darker, more grounded Bond from Fleming's novels rather than the movie franchise. Pre-Daniel Craig, I have to guess.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
So
this guy's probably talking about the Roger Moore years.
Yeah, what I wonder about this is, and I mean, even Ennis said, yeah, well, you know, I didn't want him to be this guy with the gadgets and everything. And I'm like, you know, reading the series, because I've been reading James Bond since Eidolon, which was the first story, it has felt more grounded in the books than it ever felt, you know, like it was taken on the movies. There have been very few, like, super gadgets, you know, like you had with Roger Moore and Pierce Brosnan. It feels a lot more thuggish and grounded than it ever did. So, but still, it's Garth Ennis. I can't wait to see exploding penises or whatever is going to happen in this.
I mean, you got to wonder.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, it's fair. It's absolutely fair.
Someone's getting their penis shot off. That's a Garth Ennis thing. He thinks that's funny. He's going to put that in there. Yes.
What else do we have? Let's see. Oh, proving he'll write anything for anyone. Greg Pak is now going to go and write Lilo and Stitch for Dynamite.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, you know what, dude? You know, you're Greg fucking Pak, man. Write whatever you want.
Anything you want, but yeah.
You know, you're writing Firefly there for a while, and it was okay. You know, I didn't mind it. Like I think you said at the time, is it's like the dialogue doesn't match the voices in my head, and I don't know how to reconcile that.
Because I'm like, it's Greg Pak. I really want to enjoy this, but at the same time, I couldn't. I just couldn't get the couldn't get the characters right.
Yep.
He couldn't get their dialogue right. And I'm like, I can't. I just can't. I'm sorry, Greg. I can't. And you know what? I've had that with Whedon and with Whedon.
Doesn't everybody have that?
I've got a lot of issues around Joss Whedon now. No, it wasn't Whedon. It was Bendis at a lot. Mm-hmm. Especially after his move to DC, I was like, yeah, you're not as great as I thought you were. Alias was your peak, you know, apart from his original stuff, you know, the stuff that his indie stuff, it's like, yeah, none of it's working. It hasn't been working for me for a while. So, yeah,
that's it for the news.
We'll see.
Yep. That's it for the news.
All right. We're going to take another. Well, we're not taking a break. We're going to talk about what we read this week.
Good idea.
I didn't get a ton read, and I forgot to put this one in the email, but I did get to read Wonder Woman number 1 by Tom King. And oh my God, I'm ready. I want it. I want all of the issues. I want them right now. I'm so excited for this story. It was that opening issue was so good. I mean, and I expected nothing less out of Tom King, right? Like,
yeah,
my expectations were high. And he met every one of them. So I'm super excited to continue on that one. And then a couple of weeks ago, and it could have been months at this point, I don't really recall. I was in the shop and I picked up a collection and I said, Jeff, is this worth reading? And he said, absolutely. And so I picked it up and I read the first 2 issues of 4 of Happy. And it's really good. I really am so intrigued by this weird storyline. I mean, this is, 2012?
Mm-hmm.
Is when it came out. And so, yeah, like this massive, if you could, I feel like I can say a little bit more than I typically do. Cause
it's old.
If you didn't read it in 2012, that's not on me now. Mm-hmm. But this massive hitman is got an imaginary friend and has to go save a girl. So it appears to be very intriguing, and nobody else can see the imaginary friend. So that's been fun. The first 2 were fantastic, and I can't wait to finish the other 2. But unfortunately, that was all I managed to read this week. What did you get read this week, Jeff?
Well, Destiny Gate. By a friend of the show and a friend of Utah, Ryan Cady, who it's not like he and I have some special relationship. If we do, he's unaware of it, but I've spent some time with the guy at the last couple Wasatch Comic Cons, and I just adore Ryan. I just fucking love the guy. He and Phil Sevi are like best pals. They came in to do a signing once, or no, Ryan came in to do a signing and brought Phil with him, and they were just fucking hilarious the whole time. I will buy anything Ryan writes.
Fair.
Yep. So, and then there's Cap Wolf and the Howling Commandos.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
Yeah. So let's move on to the next one.
fair.
Earth Divers, 1776. If you guys don't know Earth Divers, They just put out their first trade paperback for the first series, the first miniseries of Earth Divers, which was, in a nutshell, a bunch of Native American folks get their hands on a time machine and go back in time to kill Columbus.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah. And then the new Batman. Oh, fuck, I forgot the title. Hang on. Hang on, I'm coming. Here I come. I got it. See, I'll sing for you.
I love it.
I forgot what the name was. Oh, City of Madness. This is by Christian Ward, new DC Black Label. So issue 2 will come out sometime between now and 2026 is my guess. And then the new Sandman book that came out. That is, it's Wesley Dodd's The Sandman.
Mm-hmm.
And better than it had any right to be.
Nice.
So what about you, sir?
Well, I also read Wesley Dodd's The Sandman, which I agree. It was better than it had any right to be. These are a little limited, six-issue limited series they're doing of three of the main Golden Age characters. And as you know, I'm a sucker for the Golden Age. So I picked this one up thinking, well, it'll be okay, or it's not going to be offensive, basically. And I read it and I thought, well, you just gave me everything I wanted. Thank you. Then we had Superior Spider-Man Returns by Dan Slott. It wasn't what I expected, and that made it even more disappointing.
Oh, no.
Yep. So, yeah, I think I'll be avoiding the Superior Spider-Man's miniseries that's launching from that. Yeah, because now that I know what it's about. Though it is funny that he wound up creating a supervillain as Superior Spider-Man, locked her in a tank, and then because he forgot about his time as Superior Spider-Man, you know, he's got memory gaps around it, he goes back to this lab where he's like, I finally achieved my greatest creation in nuclear fusion. I need to go back and figure out how I did it, because I did it as Superior Spider-Man and I can't remember it all. And he goes there and he's like, yeah, so I'm just going to open this big tank up. And all of a sudden the villain comes out, I will kill you. And she's like, he's like, no, don't kill me. She's like, well, not you. I'm after Spider-Man. And she flies off. He's like, oh shit. So that was kind of fun, but at the same time, I'm like, yeah, it wasn't what I was expecting. So, speaking of what I wasn't expecting, but being kind of delighted by it, American Psycho number 1 from Sumerian.
Yeah, how was that?
Yeah.
So I wondered, am I going to be reading an adaptation, you know, comic book adaptation, which I would have been fine with, because the subtle irony and basically it's almost a parody of 80s lifestyle when you watch American Psycho.
Oh, yeah.
Patrick Bateman is Donald Trump. He's Donald Trump, really. Except that he's a broker instead of a real estate guy. And all of it was this big send-up of the 80s. And in the end, you're left with wondering, is all of that in Patrick's head that we just saw? Or is Patrick... Did this really happen and Patrick's getting away with it? That's where you're kind of left. And I love that ending. I love the ending of the movie. And the book is the same way. So this is going to say, no, that actually happened. Because we start out with a guy who is like Bateman, but kind of his opposite. Like, he dresses in generic suits. He buys generic things because he doesn't want to be, he doesn't want his mind distracted by things. Whereas Bateman is all about the excess, right?
Right, 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 right.
So he's following this girl. It's the first girl in the movie that Bateman picks up and takes back, and then he kills her with the axe. Mm-hmm. Spoilers if you haven't seen American Psycho, the movie. It's been out for 20 years or 30 years. You should have seen it by now. But yeah, it's the first girl. And so he's watching that from a rooftop. And he talks about how everybody in that apartment building leaves their windows uncovered and lets their various... what do you want to say? How you want to put it? Their kinks on display. So you see, like, people doing BDSM. You see people shooting up crack. You see people doing all kinds of things. And then you finally get to Bateman And you get a very sexy scene of him, of the two of them having sex together. I was like, damn, all right. I'm enjoying this part. And then, of course, you know, out comes the axe. I'm like, yeah, I remember this part in the movie. And meanwhile, this guy's across watching it. Then we fast forward to now. And we see somebody get killed. I figure it's that guy. And I'm like, this is interesting. We're kind of moving, you know, updating the American Psycho thing, which will be interesting to read. So, and the question is, will this then at the end, will we be wondering, was this all in his head? And I kind of like that. So, yeah, I'm kind of digging the idea of it. And yet at the same time, I'm a little disappointed. It wasn't just, you know, giving me a graphic novel of the book would be really cool, because there's a lot in the book that was left out of the movie.
I think, yeah, a book adaptation would be fine.
Yeah.
When Marvel started putting out the Mandalorian comic, mm-hmm. and it was just a retelling of the series, I mean, I probably lost 80% of the holds on that one.
Yeah, it was disappointing because yeah. we're like, well, we've seen that.
Well, yeah.
Give me some Din Djarin adventures. And they didn't, and they were like, no, we're just redoing it. And I was like, ah, it's disappointing. But this one, I was like, I could handle it being an American Psycho, you know, graphic novel. But instead, it's like, well, no, we'll see Patrick Bateman at the beginning and then we're going to move on. And I was like, you know, actually don't have a problem with that. Okay, let's see where you take this. So I'm going to have to add it into my hold so I can continue, so I don't miss it, because it's a weird press that I don't know how reliable they are at Sumerian.
They've been pretty good so far.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. They keep putting out, their stuff comes on time. Mm-hmm. We really haven't had a problem. We haven't had a supply issue problem. If anything, it's their titles sell out too fast sometimes. So...
Fair.
I can tell you that at least on Saturday, Dr. Volz had quite a few left in various covers. So various images of Patrick Bateman illustrated, which is kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We bought a lot of those.
Nice.
So we got plenty for everybody. Come on down.
Sweet.
All right. But today is Tuesday. That means tomorrow's Wednesday. Let's give our picks of the week.
You only say hello so you can say goodbye. These two words must make your life complete. You pick out the hearts that break to make your ego high. And I was just your pick of the week.
All right, Jess, start us out. Indie or...
You know, I'm going to go with mainstream first because I've got two of those.
Okay.
One's kind of really a no-brainer for me. If you know me at all, you know I'm going to pick up Captain Marvel Assault on Eden number one.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Marvel soldiers up to save the Kree homeworld. It's the new series coming out. Obviously, that's going to go right into my hold. It's already there, in fact, I'm sure. But the other one that I saw that I hadn't seen, that I wasn't paying attention to, I guess, is Moon Knight versus Werewolf by Night, Marvel Tales number one. This is, if I am understanding the solicitation correct, this is a compilation of a bunch of different issues from Moon Knight, mm-hmm. 1980, Solo Adventure number three, Mark Spector, Moon Knight. These are two characters that I'll be honest, I don't think I've ever read either of them as a series or in a comic form. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to pick this up because it just sounds like a fun little introduction to both of them. And I didn't realize that Werewolf by Night's name was Jack Russell, and that really made me laugh today. So yeah, those are my mainstream picks for this week. How about you, Jeff? What you got mainstream?
Mainstream is Marvel, the Sensational She-Hulk number one.
Woo, woo.
This one, I believe, is being written by Rainbow Rowell.
Yep.
Sure is.
And I think the Rainbow is one hell of a talented writer. Mm-hmm. I'm also picking up Wonder Woman number two, because Wonder Woman number one, it got me.
So good.
I'm interested to see what happens next. Way to go, Tom. You hooked me on another series between him and Cy Spurrier with the Flash. I'm reading two Justice League characters that I've never really read before. You know, I read a bunch of Gail Simone's Wonder Woman because it was Gail Simone. And then the talking fucking Yeti show up and I was like, okay, I'm out.
That's fair.
Not her fault. They existed before her.
Right.
Okay. So yeah, that's it for me on mainstream. How about you, boss?
By the way, that She-Hulk is just continuing what we had with Rainbow Rowell's previous She-Hulk series. It's just now called The Sensational She-Hulk, so they can renumber it as number one and get more readers.
That's fine, though, because that's when I tend to pick up things.
And honestly, it's worth reading. It was a really good series prior, you know, for the six issues they did prior to this, six or eight issues prior to this.
Right.
And this is a really good, it's going to be just as good. It's a really good series. So my pick this week from Marvel, Crypt of Shadows, number one. This looks like they've been talking about trying to bring back a horror series. I think this is sort of a, let's see how this one goes.
All right.
And you're going to get basically some stories. Steve Orlando and Kevin Scott are writing this. We're going to get some stories involving some of the MCU characters. You got Deadpool, Daredevil, Hulk, and Scarlet Witch. So you got the popular guys on the front, you know, up in the front, and then the back you can see Werewolf by Night, Man Thing, and as a mummy guy, I guess, and a haunted house. So we'll see how this goes with Crypt of Shadows. But yeah, should be a lot of fun, in my opinion. From DC Comics, following up with Wesley Dodd's The Sandman, we get Jay Garrick, The Flash, number one. So what happened in Stargirl and the Lost Children is she discovered that all of these former sidekicks, and in the case of Jay Garrick, daughter of the original Golden Age heroes, had been kidnapped and completely erased from time. And in bringing them back, they suddenly got reintroduced, you know, into time. So there's Jay sitting there, you know, in a meeting, and in comes... He and his daughter, you know, in comes his daughter, Judy, and he's like, and it just to watch him go, Judy? And he remembers everything. And this is basically going to give us some of the, or what would have been the adventures of Jay and Judy back in the Golden Age. So I'm intrigued. I want to read it because I've read some early stuff of this. It's really good. So, hopefully it's as good as, it's going to be different than Wesley Dodd's, but hopefully it'll be as good. And then my indie pick this week from IDW, Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, number one. Dexter meets Richard Scarry.
Okay.
Yeah, that's really what this is. This is a small town serial killer, upstanding citizen, an adorable brown bear, named Strong, whose cardinal rule is don't murder the locals. After all, there's a sea of perfectly ripe potential victims in the big city just beyond the forest. And when you've worked as hard as Sam to build a cozy life and a thriving business in a community surrounded by friendly fellow animal folk, warm decor and the aroma of cedar trees and freshly baked apple pie, the last thing you want to do is disturb the peace. So you can imagine our indignation when one of Woodbrook's own meets a grisly, mysterious demise, and you wouldn't blame her for doing anything it takes to hunt down her rival before the town self-destructs and Sheriff Patterson literally starts barking up the wrong tree because Sheriff Patterson is a dog. Yeah. whatever you have done, Patrick Horvath, I am in. This just sounds like so much fun. How about you, Jeff? What's your indie picks?
Titan Books has a collection coming out called Noir Burlesque. It's from Enrico Marini, who was doing Batman there for a while. It's a heist goes wrong and forces Slick to do a job for his employer, Rex, to repay the debt he owes. But Slick's in love with Caprice, Rex's ex-call girl wife turned burlesque legend. I don't know. It just sounds exploitative in a fun, nostalgic way for a time I did not live in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it looks like fun, which leads me to the next one, which is Fantagraphics. Dauntless Dames. The audacious exploits of 10 great adventurous female stars from the golden age of comic strips. I love old stuff like this. Mm-hmm. You know, nice. Back when we had hard-boiled ladies being hard-boiled and boiling hard. Hard-boiled. Jocelyn?
Sorry. Oh, okay. I picked this one because I really thought one of the two of you would pick it based on title alone, and neither of you did. But then I read the solicitation, and I was like, that actually sounds kind of charming. So I'm going to look for from Image Comics, Midlife, or How to Hero at 50, because Ruben Kwan is a 50-year-old firefighter who's been afraid of fire his whole life. His whole life, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
After 25 years in the LAFD, he's firmly in the middle of an unremarkable life until his new wife gets pregnant and a random act of courage reveals that Ruben is fireproof. Kind of sounded like the solicitation to me sounded a lot like, I just lost it. Firepower, actually.
Yeah.
So I just thought, I'll pick up the first one, see if it hooks me. If it does, great. If not, then no harm, no foul.
I think that description sounded like an awful large stack of things that were mean to say about me and him.
It's not.
Over 50, unremarkable life.
Would be thankful for the representation of a 50-year-old white guy in comics.
I actually had this as a future as a future pick about a month ago. So yeah.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh,
this is one of my future picks.
Yeah, but yeah. His presentation didn't hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry that your age hurts your feelings.
It does. I take offense at it. I take umbrage.
It's not my fault though.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. My solicitation pick for December is also coming out of Image Comics.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I am going to look for The Bloody Dozen, A Tale of the Shrouded College, number 1 of 6. The actual reason I picked this, number one, it's space vampires. So it's a new installment, apparently, of The Shrouded College. But it's being written by Charles Soleil, and I really, really, really liked his Daredevil run. I've read a few other things, hit or miss, by him and enjoyed them. And so three down-and-out astronauts are tasked with the ultimate heist, breaking a group of deadly vampires out of a space prison orbiting the sun. It's Apollo 13 meets Blade in this killer thriller.
Fun.
I don't know. Sounds intriguing. Figured it's worth a look at.
Like Friday the 13th in space.
Right, right. Like, yeah, let's just do vampires, but in space. So around the sun. It's going to be interesting. I'm just sure of it. Just sure of it. How about you, Jeff?
My December solicitation is I'm going to say Guma, The Beginning of Her, number 1. This is by Yehong Lee. And drawn by Yehong Lee and Nabaste Zitro, coming out of Titan Comics. But young Kalida escapes from a drug syndicate and discovers an ancient blade in a long-abandoned temple. Using its power, she becomes goddess of the city, controlling the citizens through dark magic and fear. But events are being manipulated against her from the shadows, targeting Kalida. I don't know. This doesn't hit what I'd normally read, but the art on this from Yehong Lee looks so fucking good. It's like Dead Romans. Yeah, good story, but the art was fucking murderous, you know, to nice. My thirsty eyeballs. So that's what I've got. What about you, boss?
My pick for December is coming from Image Comics, Where the Body Was. This is a new hardcover mystery by Ed Brubaker and Jacob and Sean Phillips. Pulp, Reckless, Criminal. This is a new graphic novel. This is an idea that basically we're going to... we've got a murder in a suburb. And... you get stories of where the body was from a whole bunch of different people with different points of view about this mystery. So I'm intrigued by this, and I fucking love Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips stuff. So yes, that will be, I've already ordered it because it's a hardcover. They're going to order a limited number at your local comic book shop. So I've already ordered it myself on Comic Hub. So make it happen. Make it so. Well, I guess that's it for us this week, kids. Anything else?
Nothing.
I got nothing.
All right.
Yeah, join us at Dr. Volt's every Saturday between now and the end of the year for all these new silver and bronze books. Look, guys, I buy comic books all week long. Silver and bronze are a huge get right now when 99% of everything being offered for sale is 90s Marvel and Image, you know? So not only do we have some really cool Marvel shit in there, we got some really, really cool DC stuff that's coming through. And that's going to be great, you know? And you know what? To earn their keep a little bit, Friday Night Magic at Dr. Volt's we've got. We got Wednesday D&D now.
Nice.
Yeah, we got a lot of really cool shit. We're having a sale on the 28th. You know, free Pokemon and free comic book for the kids. You know, there's a lot coming, including book club. We're doing Zdarsky's Public Domain this month.
Ooh, is it out in trade paperback?
It is.
The first one is.
Yep, I have copies available at the store.
Mm-hmm. Sweet. Sweet.
All right, I'm done pitching.
All right. I think we're off next week and possibly the week after that, unless Jeff and Joss want to do their own show. The infamous sidekick. We haven't done a sidekick takeover for a long time.
A couple hundred episodes at least.
Yeah, if you guys want to do your own show while I'm off getting kirked, and not in the Star Trek way. If not, we'll be back in November, I guess, with new solicitations for January, as well as all the good stuff that you enjoy on this show. And I will say, as I always do, until the Superior Spider-Man makes a villain he forgot about, make mine Marvel.
For Hell's Kitchen.
For Stan.
For Asgard.